Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Instagram has video now. Do we like it or not? Amber and I are going to talk about that. Plus, Google's testing something called Google Mine. What is it? And YouTube wants to pay its partners. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 116, recorded Friday, June 21st, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 1 million high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR6. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twits. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California, where it is beautiful outside, probably a cool 75 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I just flew in from Tampa just in time for the show. So happy that I made it in time for The Social Hour, because last week I was in New York and missed it. But I hear you guys had a fun time.
Yes, absolutely. It was great. Shannon Morse joined me, and it's her second time co-hosting on the show, and we had a blast. We missed you though, Amber. It's always fun to have somebody sitting next to me, but hopefully before too long that'll be you again.
I know. It's been almost a year. Well, not quite. 9 months since I was at Twit, but I need to make another visit out there.
You had kind of like a seat of your pants, will you make the show situation today as well. You were in Florida this morning.
Yeah, you know, it was. I feel like I thrive on really tight scheduling. And so I was just so excited when I landed at 3 p.m. and Chris was picking me up and he's like, you're never going to make it. And I was like, yes, I will. And I ran through customs, got in the car. There was no traffic, very unusual for Toronto on a Friday afternoon, and got home just in time. So I thrive on that, Sarah. It's very strange. But I do think I have been up since the wee hours of the morning, and probably around 6 o'clock after the show, I may have to slow down somewhat. But happy to be here and tons of news to talk about. And one of my favorite pieces of news is all about Instagram video.
Yeah, Instagram video. We sort of figured that this is what the mysterious announcement was that Facebook had put together, I guess about a week ago. Invitations had gone out that Facebook was ready to introduce a new product. We didn't know what it was. There were some rumors that it would be Instagram adding video capability, but there were also rumors that Facebook would be launching its own news reader, sort of like a Google Reader next gen type thing. Doesn't mean that Facebook won't still do that. But yesterday was truly all about video on Instagram. Mark Zuckerberg was only on stage for a brief period of time. Introduced Kevin Systrom, who's the founder and co-founder and CEO of Instagram. And he was really the guy who walked us through what has changed on Instagram. Not Instagram, you can still do everything that you did before. Now it just has a whole nother layer of, if you want to contribute to your friends' feeds, you can go image, or then you also have a new button for video. And then once you say, yeah, I want to take video, you've got 13 filters that didn't exist before. And in fact, they're not the same filters as the photography filters, which I thought was a little curious, Amber. I'm not exactly sure why they decided to do that, because I guess if it were me, I'd think you'd want uniform filters because you want people to start embracing a new medium on the service, but with a lot of the familiar tools that they already had.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I will say, though, I was trying it out earlier today and I posted a couple of videos that I did and I really like it. And I know there's this big battle happening online right now, which is better, Instagram video or Vine? And people have differing opinions. One thing I love about Instagram video is just that it is 15 seconds. And I feel like 6 seconds on Vine is a little bit too short. Also, I think on Vine, there is more pressure to be that much more creative and do something where you cut together a neat little video that can be a fun animated GIF. And with Instagram video, what I like is if you just want to record 15 seconds to camera, you can do that. And then the filter, Sarah. We talked about Skype filters. And the reality is sometimes you want to just add a filter to your video. And this makes it super easy. So far, so good. I'm a big fan.
Well, okay. That makes one of us because I don't hate the idea of video on Instagram in general. Yeah, videos can be up to 15 seconds. So if you want to compare that to Vine, it's quite a bit longer than the 6 seconds that Vine allows. And so there's a little bit more emphasis, even though you can kind of start, stop various videos in order to get an aggregate of 15 seconds, at least in my feed yesterday. And that means a lot of people were, you know, trying out. I was actually trying to look for Leo's video that he tried to upload during iPad Today yesterday. Both Leo and I can't seem to get our videos to upload. It's very, very frustrating. Let me think of who. I'll go to Scoble's page. User's private. Oh, that must be Robert Scoble.
That's weird. I just did too, and it was fine. But I was doing it with the Android app. I don't know if maybe iPhone users have.
An entrepreneur is pretty busy. Lots of long days.
There you are.
The reality is when you have 45 minutes or an hour like this to sit.
Rough life, Amber. Rough
fire,
life.
It makes it worthwhile.
So I don't hate the idea of video on Instagram. The problem I have, Amber, is first, it took me a little while to figure out that you can turn off autoplay. So that's something in your settings that you can just toggle on and off. So if you're the kind of person who likes to decide whether or not they want to play a video once you see that little forward arrow that indicates video, that is helpful. And what I like about Instagram videos is that they do let you choose your cover image, sort of like the, you know, the thumbnail that represents the video.
That's very helpful.
So yeah, you can make sure that it's not some, you know, unflattering, half winking type of a, you know, picture.
Like our screenshots from the Social Hour sometimes.
Exactly. Yes. Those are some of my favorites, especially the YouTube ones that nobody pays much attention to except fans. And so, but the problem with that is that often, because I'm so used to scrolling. I mean, that's how I use Instagram is a great little like, hey, I've got a limited amount of time. I can scroll through some stuff, like a few things until I see, you know, where I had left off last time. And with video, that whole process is interrupted. It's sort of a start and stop thing. And I think also with the cover photos, if something is, you know, let's say it's somebody's pet. There's a cute little cover image of the pet and it's like, it's probably that pet rolling over or maybe like chasing a stick or something. It's like, I feel as if the sneak peek is enough. And maybe that's just because I'm just so used to Instagram, again, being a static experience. Maybe I'll warm up to it, but I find myself kind of like going like, I don't know. Instagram feels like more of a commitment all of a sudden. And I don't want to, and it's sort of like, I've got friends who take really, really nice pictures. I really, really like their accounts. So I don't think the option is to unfollow them. I just might not like their videos in the same way.
See, I was getting bored with Instagram. For the past couple of months, I was barely posting at all. And I think that's probably more of an issue with my impatience with certain services in the sense that I just get bored if there's nothing new or interesting. So I think in some ways, for me, it almost brought me back to Instagram and realized, oh, I love looking at pictures and now I can look at video. And more I'm just doing, I mean, I'm so much more interested maybe in the video world and I've not really liked, talked about watching little snippets of video on my phone, but I just feel like 15 seconds is a commitment that I can handle. And I think it can be more interesting than 6 seconds. So I think there's potential for that, except that a lot of the videos just look terrible, Sarah, right? Yeah. People are holding their phones and it's super shaky. I mean, all you have to do is kind of set your against thing and keep it steady, have some decent light, but there's a lot of junk out there.
There is. There's also the notion that Facebook, Instagram, obviously owned by Facebook, Facebook didn't just choose 15 seconds to be different. They chose 15 seconds because that's a sweet spot for advertising. There are a lot of advertising spots that are created for television that are already 16 seconds. And wouldn't it be nice just to say, hey, we've already got this video. Maybe then that's a different story, Ryan. We're not quite there yet. Maybe we just say, okay, now we'll give some of these spots to Facebook as well and give them some of our precious advertising dollars. Now, that's not happening yet, and that's somewhat speculative, but we do know that Facebook does plan to have video-based advertising on the platform later this year. In fact, we just heard earlier this week that that had been pushed out a little bit to more like September. But it is coming, and I do see something like that happening on Instagram, and the 15-second mark just makes it easier for a company who's got some sort of a campaign, branded campaign, to say, well, we don't have to do anything extra if we want to advertise on Instagram. We've already got the spot created, and look, they can now handle the medium. So that's something to, you know, think about, how Instagram's going to change moving forward. And again, videos don't have to be 15 seconds if you're just a user. And you don't have to use videos at all. In fact, I would encourage us all to only choose video when it's really warranted. Maybe I'm just bitter because I tried to do three really creative videos yesterday, Amber. One like included like walking into the Twit restroom, not using it, but just sort of like I had like a whole funny caption and everything. And then it just didn't upload. And
I heard a lot of people had problems yesterday, but that could have also been due to the fact that they were so overwhelmed with people who were uploading video. I mean, Everybody I knew was trying it out and there was a ton of buzz around it. So it may have just been overwhelmed. So you should try again, Sarah. Don't give up yet.
I won't give up yet. Okay. I've got kind of a fun weekend planned ahead of me. I'm doing a little barbecue with some friends tomorrow and going swimming. And so I'll try to do something, you know, appropriately. You know, maybe I'll do like a Rich Kids of Instagram parody. Or something, you know, set that to music. It's going to be great.
Do it.
Going to be great.
And speaking of things happening over at Facebook has also introduced a feature that allows you to put an image into a comment. Now, this is one of those things that at first I thought, oh, this is kind of neat. I could see using this. And then a couple of times I went to actually leave an image in a comment and I thought, I have no idea what I'm going to put here. So I don't know if it's useful, but it could be, or it could be a total disaster.
I think, you know, there have definitely been times where I have been in Facebook and Facebook now has, you know, threaded commenting. I don't know if it's for all accounts yet or if it's just for Facebook
profile pages. Yeah.
Yeah. And certain profile. Is it for all profile pages now? For a while, it was just people who have, you know, a certain amount of subscribers. Anyway, probably because they figure, well, this feature is more helpful when there are when there's an account that always has a lot of comments. Otherwise, it's not necessarily that important. But there have been times where I've been part of a conversation on Facebook, and I have wanted to be able to insert an image. That really has happened. I can't remember any specific instances. You know, maybe it was a funny little thing, you know, like put up, you know, some sort of a lolcat thing that was somehow contributing to the conversation. So I have wanted this feature here and there, but it's not as if I'm losing any sleep over it. And the article on the Next Web that points out why this might be a bad idea is, you know, people posting offensive images or derailing threads, or it just kind of becoming sort of a juvenile thing and sort of making the whole comment thread look messy in general. I can see all of that making this option less than ideal.
Yeah, you know, and not to go back in time with our rundown as far as stories, but it just made me think with Facebook, how they have rolled it out just to certain users or profile pages. And then I think back to Instagram video. I do love how Instagram rolled that out to everyone. And it was available, I think, pretty immediately as both an iOS app and an Android app. But again, with Facebook, I'm not sure when they roll new things out, why they have to make it so complicated where some people have it, some people don't. I mean, it's all this sort of soft rollout all the time. Anyway, that's my rant. But nonetheless, I don't know. I haven't seen anyone really put it into practice where I thought it was super useful. But I think you're right. In some ways, it does make sense at certain times. Just not a lot.
I think it also is going to, right now, let's say I have a post to my friends on Facebook. Well, only my friends are going to see it, so the conversation is limited to them. But I do a fair amount of public posts on Facebook. If I am talking about the latest episode of The Social Hour, or, you know, i5, or there's an article that I'm thinking, like, this could just be for anybody who subscribed to me, not just my friends. I have my settings currently right now, and sometimes it doesn't work to my advantage, on, so anybody who's following me can comment on that. I have to clean up my comments pretty regularly. I get a lot of just like weird comments that are off topic or in another language, and I just feel that it doesn't contribute. But I like people to feel like they can be part of the conversation if I'm the one who started it off publicly. With images, it might make filtering all those comments even more of a nightmare. I haven't, you know, I haven't been able to try it out yet, but we'll have to see if it's just, if it just contributes to more junk and people posting images that are either offensive or just not funny or helpful.
So Sarah, just out of curiosity, where do you think you have the best conversations in terms of different social platforms?
That's a really good question. I posted a couple things this morning on Twitter, and I mean, nothing too amazing, but I was like, gosh, where is everybody? You know, just kind of the general, you feel like you get a certain amount of volume when you talk about certain topics. I feel like Twitter for me is kind of dead lately. And it doesn't mean that, you know, if anyone's like, hey, I just responded to you. What am I, chopped liver? I mean, I'm just purely talking in terms of volume. On Facebook, I think it's okay. I've always felt like when I've put a lot of thought into something, that starting a conversation on Google Plus, for example, I remember when I bought a bunch of home theater audio, over a year ago now. I had done all this research and I wrote up this post, and it was like, here's all the stuff I think I'm going to buy. And there were links there, and there's, you know, compare and contrast. And it was great. I mean, I had such a like great conversation of people who jumped in and were like audio enthusiasts, and we weren't constrained by 140 characters, and you could kind of go back and forth, and it all felt very well organized. That's where I felt like, gosh, this is like the perfect place for this.
Yeah,
I think I would have gotten this kind of a enthusiasm on Facebook, because Facebook is just, I don't know, it's like it's such a hodgepodge of people that I know from various points in life.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think most people on Facebook follow so many different people, or are friends with so many different people and brands, and everything just kind of comes up, and they're very fleeting moments. And the same thing with Twitter, whereas I feel like the Google Plus community, if you need help or advice on something, it's a much more thoughtful community in many ways. So I've had the same experience. I've been posting a lot more on Google Plus, and not everything I post gets a lot of interaction. But if I go there and I want help or I have a question about something, I feel like if you dive into the comments, the quality of information that people are sharing is a lot higher than anywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting.
I know it's and it'll probably change. You know, the stuff does seem to ebb and flow. Certainly. Speaking of ebbing and flowing, Twitter. I don't really know if it's ebbing and flowing, but Twitter does tend to sort of go up and in and out of the social radar as far as acquisitions go. But it has been on a bit of a buying spree. The latest acquisition is a social startup called Spindle. Amber, I'm not sure if you are familiar with Spindle or not, but this was the first I had heard of Spindle. It's a company based out of Boston. The idea is that it's a mobile app that's supposed to help you discover social updates from nearby shops and restaurants and bars and events and parks, museums, galleries. And the way that it does this is it supposedly scans social networks. So, for example, if there are enough people who tweet about Magnolia Bakery is like offering free cupcakes, that kind of thing, eventually that would surface on Spindle. And if you happen to be down in the West Village of New York City or thereabouts, you might that would surface on Spindle, and you'd be like, oh, cool, I can take advantage of this. So it's kind of like geolocated. Here's something interesting that's happening that might be near you. Now, maybe part of the reason that I wasn't familiar with it is it's still somewhat limited. I mean, it works in San Francisco where I live, but it's not a worldwide thing yet. They've got some presence on the East Coast, Chicago, West Coast. But how do you see Twitter using something like this, Amber?
I mean, is this right in the article on All Things D where they say that Twitter plans to shut down the service?
Yes.
Okay.
The team is relocating from the East Coast to San Francisco to work for Twitter, and Spindle will no longer be a standalone service.
Okay. I think it's one of those things that it makes sense for Twitter to do so. I'm just not totally clear exactly what the service does. I mean, I think I understand it generally, but it doesn't seem that interesting off the top. But maybe I need to try it out because I have not heard of it before you put it in the rundown, Sarah. So not too sure in terms of how I could potentially use it. But like you said, it seems like it's right now it's very regional to certain cities.
Yeah. And there may be a lot more adoption in its hometown of Boston than San Francisco.
Or
maybe I'm
just
not running in the Spindle circles. That's totally, that's
possible.
That's very, very possible. Although I do, and Mike Isaac, who wrote up the article for All Things D that we both read, I do kind of agree that this seems like something that Twitter might want in order to go on the defensive against Foursquare, which has become a lot less of a game-oriented check-in site and more of a geolocated discovery engine based on, hey, wherever you are, you want to see restaurants that are nearby you, stuff that's good, where your friends have been, that kind of thing. Twitter more and more has put emphasis on its treasure trove of mobile apps. And if Twitter has a layer of, hey, here's what's interesting that's near you, rather than just here's what's interesting based on who you follow, that is probably something that would make a lot of sense for them to at least build into their mobile apps for people who use mobile apps.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Now, this service, Google Mind, Sarah, I have not heard a lot about this, but based on this article just mentioning that Google Mind will be integrated with Google Plus and a way to keep track of things that you own or you'd like to have and share some of them with your circles. Now, I don't know. I don't know if it's because I'm sleep deprived, but I have to tell you that I'm not really thinking that I would use something like this right off the bat. They talk about it being a service where you could catalog your belongings, track what you have, review your belongings, send requests to borrow things. Maybe my life doesn't revolve enough around things to use something like this.
It is the weirdest thing. I
okay, good. I'm not
imagine.
Alone.
Now, this was written up by Google Operating System, which is unofficial news about Google. So this is not some sort of like a Google has announced this type of a thing. But apparently Google Mine would be integrated with Google Plus. And yeah, as a Google Mine user, I would have an inventory of products. So not just, you know, electronics, but all sorts of stuff. And you know, gadgets or bikes or clothing, that sort of thing. So you'd catalog your belongings, you'd review your belongings for your friends to see. You could track conversations about certain products that you have. Then there's a little bit of like a bartering system. You can request to borrow or, you know, maybe trade for your friend's stuff. And then you can share stuff that you'd like to have that you don't have already. Amber, I've seen stuff like this work in the past for specific items. There are the sort of neighborhoody, neighbor goods or Zarly type services where there's a, hey, I've got this and you can borrow it because I only mow my lawn every so often. And so I've got this lawnmower that friendly neighbor could use or maybe for a small fee. And then you've got services like GDGT Gadget, which is now owned by AOL. So it may change so much, but that's sort of like a personal inventory of gadgets that you have and then a discovery service for gadgets that you want. But for Google to be like, hey, just go through your house and
it's so strange.
Yeah, and make all of this inventory seems to me to be way less about how this would help us and way more about Google saying, I'd like to really know about you. I specifically want to
really
know about what you have, not just what you do online and where you've been.
As much as on Google Plus there are people, myself included, who maybe have circles where they do circles based on what city they live in, I think the reality is for most people on Google Plus, it's not necessarily people who live nearby who you could ever borrow something from. I mean, I don't think of Google Plus as a hyper-local social network at all. So in that sense, it doesn't seem like Google Mine would really be all that useful if you were talking about sharing different items. So it's a little bizarre. I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things that I can't, you know, having spent as much time in Google Plus as I have, especially recently, I just can't see this really flying with the community there. It seems just to be a whole different group of people who'd want to do that type of stuff.
Yeah, too much work. I mean,
too much work.
I've got a lot of stuff, man. I don't want to go through all that and enter it in, and who knows what it's going to look like. But I'm with you. I am not the target audience for something like this, unless we just don't realize how helpful this would be. I mean, I guess that, you know, it's funny. I was having a conversation with somebody last weekend about this. It was like a floating raft, you know, that you'd have on a river or in a lake or something. Mm. And he said, "Gosh, you wouldn't believe it. This particular brand of raft, it had the most bizarre Amazon review comments, because people just, it's like they take it really seriously. And, you know, there were certain things about the raft that people liked. It's like all it's supposed to do is keep you, you know, above the water type thing." And it had kind of just devolved into this sort of crazy conversation about, you know, floating in a pool. And maybe there's a little bit too Google mind here, where they say people get really passionate about the things that they have or things that they've bought and they want to share it. And maybe that's where we're all supposed to go.
I feel like there's places online where you talk about things, and then there are places online where you talk about ideas. And I'm hoping that we skew more towards the ideas place as far as a social network. So or knowledge or research or information or news or whatever it might be, you know, it's more about sharing that information and content than it is about sharing information about things. But I totally believe there is that community that's just always reviewing things that they're buying. And I'm sure it went from eBay and other services that they just get absorbed in getting really specific about certain items. But again, I think just different, those are just different communities. Google Plus, not so much.
Beaner in chat says, "This will be great for cataloging my old comics, games, and swag I got from publishers." So there you go. This is already appealing to people in a way where I say, well, that's great. I feel like...
Nice.
It depends on how many comics you have, Beaner. To me, I'm like, ooh, it sounds like a catalog nightmare. But
that's like a lot of work.
But maybe we have enthusiasm for different things, and that's fine too.
Yes, exactly.
So Yeah, Amber, I've always been jealous of people who have, you know, been on Twitter's suggested users list or featured in some certain way on Instagram. So they've got all these followers. But I guess it's not all it's cracked up to be, huh?
Yeah, actually, Sarah, are you talking about the YouTube advertiser story? Is that the...
Oh, well, I just skipped right over that, and I was talking about the tyranny of most popular lists, actually.
I was is this some personal vendetta you have against people who are YouTube content partners? Because I'm trying to find the segue, and it's really not working for me.
No, I just forgot a story. Just forgot a story.
It's okay. So I'll go with that, though,
yeah,
Sarah.
Good.
And speaking of Twitter, also talking about YouTube, and we've talked about this before, I feel like I missed the boat entirely with YouTube. And there are people out there who are doing really well, like iJustine, who have these massive followings. And that's the one place where I just never hopped on and really got that immersed in that community. And it looks at like YouTube, who've already done a great job of kind of cultivating that community of content creators. They are also starting to do so with advertisers, and they're going to bring advertisers into their partner program starting this fall. The idea being they're working with advertisers like American Express, General Electric. This is all in this TechCrunch article, Johnson & Johnson, and their ad agencies. And they're trying to, based on this story, I think, try to match them up with certain content creators in Google so that they're creating really, really custom content that they can advertise around. And it could be with potentially some of the partners that already exist on YouTube.
I think that this is really great for YouTube partners who are already in the partner program,
yep,
that have enjoyed success and consider this their livelihood or certainly part of it. And I would never say, advertising is bad because, hey, Twit runs on advertising as well. That said, when you get into the branded content category, it can get messy. Because then you've got people who are creating content around an advertiser saying, we have this many dollars, we'd like to give you these dollars, and we'd like you to talk about this microwave, you know, mm-hmm, or this microwave somehow is going to have to be incorporated into this next skit that you do. And, you know, I'm I'm taking a completely hypothetical situation out of thin air, but that starts to, when it's dictating the content, when advertising is dictating the content, it can just get messy, and people have to be really, really transparent about that.
Yes.
And I assume that this is something that YouTube is absolutely familiar with, and they will try to go about it the best way possible. But a twit, you know, we've always had to be really, really careful that that sort of stuff doesn't creep in to what we do. You know, keep advertising and editorial completely separate. So it'll be interesting to see how they do this creatively without alienating the audience who already likes a lot of these successful YouTube partners.
I think you're right, though. I think the key word is transparency. And there have been branded content initiatives that have been done online that are done really well. But the reality is most of those, they keep it very transparent as far as the company behind, whoever is funding it, that's really upfront. So as long as that is part of the equation, like you mentioned, I think this could be kind of successful. And you know what? I want to see content developers being able to make money off their content. And it's not easy. You know, if you're one of the YouTube partners that they have worked with for a long time, maybe you have views in the millions. But for most people, it's difficult to get to that point. So I think it's a good sign that things are going this way. But I think, you know, you do have to be careful. And you have to make sure that you are upfront about who's behind the content and just be honest about it. Pretty straightforward.
Agreed. And congratulations to all those YouTube partners that are doing so well. I mean, a lot of them are kind of, YouTube is about so much more than internet people talking to a camera. But there are so many people on YouTube that I kind of consider our internet video peers, Amber.
Yeah.
And so I want us all to succeed.
Yes. I'm with you on that. All right. So I know that there are a lot of people who are watching the show who maybe have jobs in the social media space. Maybe you're a content creator and you have to write articles or blog posts. Well, you may find this article interesting. This is from The Atlantic, and it is talking about top 10 posts and our most popular list that are across many magazine sites and online publications and why they're so popular. So it's a fairly lengthy article, but the gist of it is that one of the reasons that people really gravitate towards these most popular lists is that people are lazy. They kind of come out and say this in the article. They actually base this on a quick little study that they did internally at The Atlantic, saying that they redesigned their entire website, moved most popular links in a place where it wasn't as prominent, but still, that's where people constantly went. You know, we really want the easy solution as far as finding content that other people like that we can find, probably because we were consumed with so much information through different channels that it's the simplest thing just to go to a most popular list and see what everybody else is looking at.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? I guess it's because especially things move so fast now in internet time that something that's, a meme, I mean, the concept of a meme is very, very fleeting now. But it's something that's like a trend or a funny commercial, and people reference it, and there's a little bit of like, oh, it's in the vernacular, oh, there's a pop culture thing going on. It's like the time that something like that is popular is so shortened that maybe that's mm-hmm. what drives people to click on anything, where it's like, what's hot right now? What's popular? I want to make sure I don't miss it, because someone might reference it later and I'll be left behind. You know, it's like, I've got this little window, so tell me the top tens.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating. I mean, and they also mentioned this article that they take two sociologists, someone named Matt, someone named Duncan, who did an experiment with music, and they had subjects who received 48 songs that were listed in order of the most downloaded, most popular songs at the top, but they reversed the list for other people. And it turns out that people ended up liking the songs when they reversed, even the least downloaded songs, just believing that they were in fact the most downloaded. I know that sounds a little confusing, but the gist of it is that we are totally persuaded by things that rise to the top of these most popular lists, and we put a lot of value into that.
That's so crazy, but I can kind of see why that happens. It's the perceived, oh, this is a thing that people like, or this is a thing that people are talking about, even if it's not actually true, even if it's the inverse of that. That ends up swaying people into certain behaviors.
Yeah. So I guess for content publishers out there, the gist of it is if you're looking for content to share, you may want to have a most popular list on your blog. Even if the order is, not necessarily the right order, people will still click.
Yeah. Because they're like, oh, other people like this. Exactly. I want to make sure I'm not going to be left behind.
Yep.
That was quite a news section. Boy, there was a little bit of everything today. A quick reminder, just for anybody who is watching us live. This is not a reminder for you, but anybody who's watching us on demand, hello. Or listening to us, hello. We do record the show Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. So you can join us live if you can. It's kind of fun. A little bit of it's the rough version of our show where all sorts of things happen. We have to deal with technology on the fly. But if you want to watch any of our content or get links to anything that we've talked about, our website is twit.tv/TSH. And you can email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv if you ever have any feedback on anything that we've talked about in previous episodes. If you want to subscribe to the show, last week was Shannon and I. If you haven't watched that show, it was a lot of fun. We talked about all sorts of, gosh, I don't even remember what we talked about now. It was good, though. Well, there was a shopping thing. I remember that part. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Stitch Fix. That was the highlight of the show for me. But as you can see, we talked about all sorts of stuff. We got the links in there, too, so you can follow along as well. Okay, so we've got a little bit more social tips. We've got some spotlights for you. Before we go any further, let's take a moment to thank Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. At Shutterstock.com, you can find the perfect image or video for your next project. We have a lot of creative people who watch The Social Hour. Maybe you're involved in putting together, some sort of a cool company website, or maybe like a video that describes what your service does, and you need media. You need to figure out how do I spice up this website or this video or an advertisement. You can choose from over 1 million high-quality stock video clips, 2D or 3D animation, even motion graphics, so it's all sorts of stuff. And they have clips in a lot of different formats. So don't worry if you're thinking, well, I have something very specific and I worry that none of these videos are going to work for my project. They're designed actually to work with a variety of different projects. You know, you need a video. Yeah, we're looking at cat videos right now. You need a very specific video of a cat, chasing after a feather. I mean, Shutterstock has that stuff. In fact, if you do searches, you can search by topic, but you can also search by, sentiment, happy cat versus sad cat. And, there's colors that get involved. I mean, it's really kind of fun to do image video searches for the stuff, because you end up finding happy family we searched for here. You look at all these happy people. You end up finding stuff that might really work that maybe you didn't even realize was out there. You didn't realize, oh, that's actually perfect for us. Also, you don't have to worry about it being limited, because Shutterstock has a huge, huge library of video. They add over 10,000 video clips each week, and a lot of the contributors to Shutterstock are professional filmmakers and animators, and Shutterstock reviews all of the videos individually to make sure that they're weeding out stuff that just isn't the highest quality content. So there you go. I mean, this is the upper echelon of videos. Shutterstock also makes it easy to share videos with collaborators, friends, colleagues, people that you say, I've got several clips in here. Shutterstock has shareable clip boxes. You go ahead and save those video assets to your clip box. And then not only can you access them anytime, but you can share with other team members that you designate. Yeah, they should be looking at this stuff too. I want Julie to sign off on this happy family video that I think is going to be perfect for our advertisement. If you want to try Shutterstock today, you can sign up for a free account. You don't need a credit card or anything like that. You just go ahead and sign up, start an account, and start using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project might look like, and then save some video selections you find to your clip box. If you decide to go ahead and purchase a plan, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR6. So that's Social Hour, one word, and then the number 6. It's because we're in June, and that's the 6th month of the year. And new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 30% off new accounts, use that offer code Social Hour 6, And we thank Shutterstock for their support of The Social Hour. Even though it's a little bit of a tongue twister, we're happy to have them. Thanks, Shutterstock. All right, Amber, this is a fun tip that you found online, and it's very timely because it's about embedding Instagram videos that, 48 hours didn't even exist.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So this Mashable article has all of the details that you need to know to embed Instagram videos. And I'd love to tell you that it's really simple, but their first solution involves quite a bit of effort. So since Instagram doesn't currently offer support to embed those videos on your website, you have to go in. The example here is using Chrome or Safari, right-click on the video, select Inspect Element, grab a specific part of the URL. You got to kind of tweak a bunch of things. Anyhow, we'll put a link in our show notes so you see how to do that. But the article also mentions that you can use a service called Embedly. So for example, if you have a site on WordPress or probably other providers that work with Embedly, you can use that to embed your Instagram videos, and it's a lot easier than the above example of how to do it. But eventually Instagram will probably offer this support. But if you can't wait till then this is one option to get your Instagram videos embedded on your page.
That's great. Is that something that... that, Amber, you think you'd be doing on your website?
I could see it maybe once in a while. I don't know if there's a huge need for it right now, but I guess the point of it is also to remember that when people are viewing your Instagram videos, they do have to, if they're seeing them in Twitter, for example, they do have to click out to the link to look at them. So you could have something you really love promote to embed it, but I probably won't use it all that much. Unless they make it part of their offering.
Yeah. And I love the fact that we've got this workaround, certainly for the time being. This actually kind of just brings up, you mentioned, Twitter links, Instagram links on Twitter. Something else that bothers me about these Instagram videos is it's not clear, and that's because Twitter and Instagram don't play nicely with each other, where Instagram is not considered a Twitter card. Facebook pulled that, actually. It wasn't Twitter saying, Instagram, you're shut out. We're not going to be able to show you inline photos on Twitter. That was actually Facebook pulling that functionality. But you can't tell from a link. You can tell on Twitter that it's an Instagram link, but you can't tell that it's a video. And it's really helpful for me to know, am I clicking on something that's going to be a video, or am I clicking on something that's an image that I can look at, in less than a second sometimes, and then close it again. And it doesn't feel right. I was thinking that this morning because I clicked on a couple of links in Twitter, and I was like, I got taken over to an Instagram video, and I was like very irritated. But it's not Instagram's fault. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work seamlessly.
So they don't distinguish at all, basically. Is that?
No. Not from these little shortened URLs. You can tell that it's going to go to something on Instagram, but you can't tell, at least at this point, and it's going to be a video.
Yeah, I agree with you. It would be good because I'm with you on watching videos versus looking at stills. If I'm standing in line at the grocery store or something, I may want to just browse through Instagram photos. I don't know if I need to watch a video right away.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to our spotlight of the week. So, Amber, how often do you read anything that people write on the sort of storytelling, sort of blog network Medium?
Pretty much never.
Okay. All right. Well,
it's being honest. Very rare. Yeah.
This is the service that Ev Williams, who is one of the founders of Twitter and BizStone, had put together. And it's been a little bit of a head scratcher for some folks. Like, what does Medium do? I mean, it's not like a Tumblr where it's about sharing maybe thoughts or images or videos in sort of a microblogging format. It's more of a long-form thought piece type of service. For a long while, it was completely closed, and it might still be. Somebody in chat, correct me. I believe it's open to everybody now, and I've never really written anything on Medium, Amber, because it's a little bit unclear to me why I should write it there rather than my own blog or one of the other places that people write things. But it seems to be gaining a bit of steam. I find that I have a pretty big number of my friends who have at least written something on Medium a couple of times. In fact, somebody I know had a Medium post that he had shared via Twitter, and I read it and I was like, gosh, he's a great writer. I'd never seen him write anything anywhere before. So it might be one of those services that's good for people who aren't daily bloggers and, you know, maybe feel passionately about something here and there. Well, our spotlight this week is called Untedium. So it's the URL is a little bit weird. It's rdng.ly/untedium. We will have that link in our show notes. But the idea is that when you log in, and I've gone ahead and used my my Twitter credentials to log in to Untedium, what it does is it surfaces articles written on Medium that are people I follow on Twitter. And that's really helpful for me If you go to Medium, which is just the general website, and you can search by user, or you can search by a particular topic. But it's a little bit of a needle in the haystack operation because so many people are writing on Medium now. So I've got Veronica Belmont. She had written a really interesting piece about how her gaming priorities have shifted. Leah Culver talked about how she started running. My friend, where is he? Lane Wood, who's the one who I said I'd never seen anything that he had written before, had a really great sort of thought piece about our connected world and how it's made friendship sometimes a little bit unusual or weird. And this is actually really, really helpful for me because these are all people that I really like. Even Carl the Fog apparently has a Medium post up there.
Cool. That's very cool. Yeah. I mean, I think you're exactly right. If you're looking to discover people who you follow on Twitter who use Medium, that's such a fun way to do it. And there are people on Twitter who I follow, and I think sometimes, wow, I'd like to read more about what they're writing because sometimes 140 characters isn't enough. So I would definitely give this a whirl.
Yeah, it's great. This is, you do have to give Untedium your Twitter credentials. So make sure that you feel comfortable with that beforehand. But once I did, I all of a sudden had a great amount of stuff to read. So there you go. That was actually shared by Gina Trapani on Twitter. That's how I saw this little site. And it was down for a couple of hours. And I think it was probably because so many people were pinging the service trying to figure out who of their Twitter friends had written something on Medium. So if for any reason you get any errors, it just took me giving it an hour or so and then pinging it again. And it worked just fine.
Love it.
All right. Well, we've got an email from Juan Munoz, who lives in Bogota, Colombia. And this is in reference to the news last week. Amber, I don't know if you saw this news because you weren't on the show last week, that RDO had opened up. RDO, of course, being the music subscription service that was available in some countries but not others, opening up to a variety of other countries in, I believe, Europe and Asia.
Very cool. So he's basically saying that after listening to the episode, he's talking about how RDO is getting into new markets based on what you guys were chatting about. And he says, I started my trial period and I love the app much better than Spotify since I don't have to use VPN anymore to access the service. Most of the music is up to date. Just a few albums are not available, but that's because negotiations with the labels. Really interested in getting a premium account. The price of that in Colombian pesos is equivalent to $7.82. And he also talks about how much he likes the show, The Social Hour, and he enjoys the news that we do on the show. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks, Juan. It's nice to have a listener/viewer in Colombia. And it's also interesting, I did a little conversion, Amber, that it's funny because I had to look up. I was like, what is the currency of Colombia? It's the peso, Colombian peso, COP. And when you plug in a little converter, 14,999 Colombian pesos, which is what you'd be paying for a web mobile version of RDO, turns into $7.82. So, I pay $10 a month here in the U.S., so I guess there's a little bit of a strong U.S. dollar going on there. So if you were, I don't know, down in Bogota, you could save a couple of bucks a month. But, yeah, it's very interesting, and we love hearing about how And I think you could call RDO a social network because there's such a social component of listening to music and who other what other people are listening to and great music discovery that way. But what services people like around the world and what sticks for you?
I was just going to say that it would be really cool if we have listeners in different parts of the world, which I know we do. If you could share which social network is really popular where you are, and it would be even more interesting if it's a social network that we've never heard of. And you can share that with us at the social hour so we can share it on the show.
Yes, very true. Right. So I've been patiently waiting for the part of the show where Amber makes me just a little bit happier with something cat related. Is this the moment that I've been waiting for?
It is the moment. And I have to say, though, there's not a whole lot about cats in this article, but I was really captivated, excuse the pun, by the headline that says Memes with Meaning, Why We Create and Share Cat Videos and Why It Matters to People and Brands. And this is basically an article that goes into some of the different memes that are online. I had to choose it because it is focused on some of the cat memes. But I like this one in particular that has, there's a little cat with reddish hair who's floating on, I think, what looks like a chicken burrito, maybe down halfway down the page. And for our audio listeners, you can check this out on in our show notes.
Oh, that Sarah would like that. Yeah, I know. He's bouncing on his like magic burrito chalupa thing.
It's kind of fun, you know. It just caught my attention. Nonetheless, it gets into why people are attracted to things like this. And I think the little nugget here is in the middle of the article that says, "As humans, we've always wondered." Is this all there really is out there? Through poetry, art, and philosophy, and now the visual web, we strive to elevate the everyday by feeding our appetite for imagination and discovery. It also talks about our need for connections and enjoying simple everyday things. Very interesting article that's part of a series it looks like that they're doing that's called The Engagement Project, talking about content and engagement. But, you know, just focusing on why, just getting to the root of why people are really fascinated with cat memes and other memes. Sarah, you would know more about the cat thing than I do, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of these funny things that, yes, I like cats, so it's all it's very convenient for me to just sort of go crazy about cat memes and videos and Grumpy Cat and Maru and all of that stuff online, but there is something about this, right? I mean, it's not just because cats are so interesting. It's not always cats either. I mean, you've got dramatic chipmunk, or you've got I don't know. I can't think of anything else besides chipmunk and cats.
What about the double rainbow?
Yeah, exactly. And that's there's something where it's like a collective either aw or that's funny or that makes me mad, or that guy's crazy, where it is a, yes, reaching out to the universe of other people that could also have access to see this piece of content that I'm seeing, that I'm absorbing, and we all feel somewhat connected to each other. I mean, at the very root of it, as silly as a lot of this stuff is, that is what's going on, and I think that's why you find that there are whole communities that are built around, you know, these things that are actually very funny. You know, not just the people who decide. Sorry, Maru, jumping into boxes is very distracting. But I mean, how could that cat not be a superstar? Look at him. But that's it's those people that, you know, you kind of go like, oh, what a cool guy who's putting all of this out there, you know, into the world. I follow all these Facebook accounts of, you know, people who I consider absolute saints, you know, who have these, you know, special needs pets, and there's all this whole community built around it, and for the most part, it makes people act in positive ways.
I think you're right. It almost feels like we live in a world where people, we have the maybe loneliest people that have ever been alive in our history, and also the most connected people. And I think in some ways, some of these things help those people who just want that connection, right? You know, just want simple things and to enjoy just funny little mundane things like cat memes. I'm even starting to like cat memes, Sarah. I don't know. Now I'm like searching for cat memes, and now I see their innocence. I see their charm, and I'm getting sucked into the world of cat memes.
Aw, yeah. Yeah, welcome.
See?
Welcome. There's no turning back. It's like the Hotel California, you know? Can check out, but you can never leave.
Yeah, nope. I'm feeling that
You're
way.
You're here for life. Yep. Reminder, international people, people in the U.S., people in Canada, that covers it between Amber, me, and all of you. Unless you are from where Lil Bub is from, and that's outer space, a distant planet. We do love hearing from you. We mentioned, you know, we'd love to hear about the kinds of social networks that you find the most helpful or the most interesting or that seem to be catching on regionally. Absolutely, because there are things that matter to people based on, you know, what you do and where you live. And for example, a social network like Spindle that Twitter just acquired, Amber and I, we have basically no history, no experience with Spindle. And maybe you do. And there's so many of those other things out there, too. So we do want to hear from you. You can always write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. We're not going to answer, but that is our little Google Voice voicemail box. So you can leave us a note, maybe a question or a comment.
Or make us an Instagram video.
Or an Instagram video, absolutely. But tag, yeah, I guess Amber or I or at Reply Us so that we see the video. Because, you know, it's funny. We talked about this on iPad Today yesterday, Amber. Somebody in chat said, well, where, you know, what's the account that we tag? And Leo and I said, well, we don't really have an iPad Today account. I guess just tag us. So I guess that's kind of how you and I operate on other social networks. So, yeah, if you want to send us a little 15-second video, we know that you won't be able to go long because it can only be 15 seconds. So it'll keep things nice and brief. Or record a video anywhere you want. If you're some sort of an Instagram hater, that's okay. We understand. You can record the video, upload it somewhere, and send us the link, and we would love to feature you on a future episode of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, get ready for your rad or fad, but let's first quickly thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love SAP because they make social tools for people like us, people who want to know, hey, I've got a brand, I've got something I care about, I'm putting it out into the world, and I really need to know what people are saying about it. Are they talking about it on their blog? Is it a good thing? Are they upset? Oh, gosh, now I've got to provide some customer service. People are going crazy on Twitter about this new product that we might have put out or talking about our service. This is the sort of stuff you have to keep on top of because you know that if you don't, it gets out of control and it makes companies look bad when they're not monitoring social media and making sure that not only are they aware of what people are saying, but they're making sure that they're solving problems and interacting with their customers. With social media solutions from SAP, large enterprises can listen and engage with social media in a systematic way. I mean, it all has to start systematically, or you're going to get buried. There's a listening component that searches the social web in a smart way, intelligent way, to know, what are people saying about my brand? You can capture reports on conversations using relevant terms. You can use sort of like level of passion that somebody has, whether they're really excited and this is maybe somebody you want to reach out to because you could feature their happy story in some way, or somebody who's really, really angry about something or upset or confused, and you can smooth out the situation. It can help you build better products by incorporating real-time customer feedback into your innovation efforts. And you just learn more about who your customers are. Who are all the people who have been driven to Twitter to talk about your brand, you know, to add your brand to a hashtag or to be trying to publicly and directly at reply to you and catch your eye. You can identify customers who are ready to buy your product based on buying signals that they're sending via social media. It can make you just do your job better. And social media solutions from SAP uses natural language processing. This is big data at work here. This is how it can figure out how people feel and be able to parse data from a large section and figure out how this actually helps you based on not just things like keywords, but sentiment and mood and who this person is and what other things that they like. Then the engaging component, of course, is how you improve customer service and support, because you can set rules about which messages go to which members of your team. You might have a really big team and everybody's got a different job, and you need to make sure that the messages are being funneled to the appropriate people. Maybe you have a small team, but it can help you divvy up the workload. Hey, we've got to respond to all of these people. We have to follow up with all of these people. Let's figure it out. Here's what they all look like. And you can quickly solve customer problems and rapidly respond to customer feedback. Social media solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing, a lot more than marketing, because you can improve your customer service and support experience. If this seems like something your business could use to their advantage, go to sap.com/twit. You can take a guided tour there. There's a lot more information than what we have time to talk about, but hopefully you get a little bit of an idea of what you might be able to use with social media solutions. sap.com/twit. Again, see for yourself how social media solutions from SAP works. They got a nice little social hour page up there just waiting for you. So go there, find out more about it. And if you do end up using social media solutions, that's actually really helpful for us, because we can pass along to SAP that you like their product, and you see, they can use their own product for their own product. It's an infinite loop of awesome. All right, Amber, I guess it's time for Rad or Fad, is it not?
It is. Okay, so before we get to Rad or Fad, Nicole Bailey, who I guess is watching the show, just emailed me and asked me if I sneezed. I did not sneeze. Oh. I mean, I do sneeze a lot, but I didn't sneeze. So, Nicole, you just have to hold out for a little while until maybe the next episode, and there'll be a sneeze coming soon, I'm sure. All right, and on to our Rad or Fad. This is a product that was written up on TechCrunch. They've received about $200,000 in funding, but they've also gone online to do a Kickstarter-like campaign to look for an additional $20,000 in funding. It's a tiny little tag that you attach to things like your car keys, they say your wallet, perhaps laptops, things like that, even bikes. And then if you lose those things on a frequent basis, you're able to find them using the app. And since this little device will be attached to that item, you can use Bluetooth and find that particular item. Now, at first, I thought this is awesome because I lose things all the time. And then I thought, well, the thing that I lose all the time is my iPhone or whatever smartphone I'm using. And it's useless to attach this to that if I lose the phone. Do you know what I mean, Sarah?
Yeah. So it has to be, something that something you lose often that's definitely.
But not your phone.
Yeah.
Because you need the app.
Everything but your phone. You know, Recently on TNT, we had talked about a type of luggage that was being built by, I don't know, some company that does luggage. And it was with like a location chip built into the luggage so that if an airline loses your luggage, you'd be able to figure out where it had gone. And we all sort of went, yeah, that seems pretty great. And anybody who's had their luggage lost knows that if you could just figure out where it was sooner than later, you know, it's a huge weight off. But this makes more sense because I could just maybe like tuck one of these into my luggage before I go traveling and rest assured that if for some reason it doesn't end up in the baggage claim where I'm standing, I at least know where it is. You know, did it ever leave my destination point?
But since it's Bluetooth, you're only going to have a limited range, right?
Oh, geez. I didn't think about that.
Yes. Now, they say that there's a crowdsourced element where that other people who have the app installed, they could potentially be near your item and they could get a notification that could then help notify you about where that certain item is. But that would only work if there was really a mass audience of people who adopted this service and got the little tags and the app as well. So I do like the idea, but I don't think it's perfect yet.
Yeah, I think the Bluetooth is extremely limiting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've lost my phone here and there in my own house. You know, it'll fall behind a couch cushion or something.
All the time.
It happens. And you can, on Find My iPhone, and please let me know if Android has something similar, probably does. I can have the phone emit like a high-pitched noise. If for some reason I don't have an easy way to like call the phone, or I don't have somebody where I'm like, can you call my phone? Or maybe the phone's on vibrate. And so I can locate it. I mean, I don't know how much better this would be than something like that, because you have to be so close.
Well, here's the thing. So it will also emit a noise, like a beep. Now, I think it would be cool for car keys. Like, I could see that's where it would work really well. You permanently attach this to your car keys, and then I'm most often losing my car keys somewhere where, you know, I'm not going very far. So I think that it could be useful in that respect. But as far as the other items, I'm not too sure. And the crowdsource piece, I can see that taking a while for that to ever really come into play because they do need that critical mass. But I think it's rad. It just needs some improvement.
Yeah. The concept is very rad. It's sort of like I could see having these little chips on a variety of things, and then when I really need them not working for some reason.
This is the problem with technology, right? As soon as the battery is dead on your phone, you're doomed and you're lost. So it's not a perfect solution.
Yeah. It's got legs. Yeah. I think eventually we'll live in a world where pretty much anything that you lose, you can be like, bloop, bloop. Ooh, I've got an app for that, and it's at, you know, the ice cream shop down the street type thing. I would like this for articles of clothing, Amber, because you know how, and I don't know, obviously this exact product would not do well, like, attaching to your underwear or anything, but you know how after...
Where are you going with this, Sarah?
I'm going to bring it back. And it can't just be me. I will, you know, buy like 10 pairs of socks once a year, and somewhere in that year, you know, 7 of those socks like loses their mate and drives me insane. And it's like, I really don't, I'm not like flippant with socks or anything, you know, or I go and visit, you know, a friend and I leave a belt, but I didn't realize that the belt was there. And maybe the friend thinks that it looks like her belt. And so I never see it again. It's like, there are definitely things that I feel like I lose on a regular basis, and I would love to just have the option to figure out where those things are.
Yeah.
This is not that solution, but at least we're going in that direction.
Yeah, I think for me, definitely the car keys. I could use it for car keys because I lose those a lot. But I think I would try it for that, and I can't really see using it for anything else. So is it rad or fad? I think it's kind of rad.
I think it's kind of rad, yeah. It needs to be fleshed out, like you said, a little bit more.
And I don't think it's a fad because I think, to your point, this is something that's probably going to evolve. The technology is just going to get better and better all the time. And there'll come a time where anything we lose, we will be able to find. So it's definitely not a fad. It's kind of the beginning of using technology to find lost things.
It's kind of like technology contributing to the fact that we're all a little bit more multitasking and scattered on a regular basis. I mean, I am so confused as to what I'm doing half the time when I walk into a room these days, you know, or last night I had like half an hour to charge my phone before I had to go out for a while. And it's like, I kept like going to grab my phone and plug it into my charger in the wall. And somewhere between then and here, I would do all these other things. And I kept sitting down and going, oh my gosh, I have to plug in my phone. Why can't I keep doing this? And then I'd like see my iPad or there'd be something else. I mean, I'm an absolute wreck, Amber. I mean, I'm lucky to be getting to work every day because
as long as
I just, there's so many distractions.
I know. Get to work, get in front of the camera, stay there, go home.
Right.
That's all I need to know. Don't leave your clothes places.
Exactly.
If you just follow those rules, you'll be okay, I think.
All right, good. So it's rad, and you know, we'll check in with this lose everything and find it again technology, because I think it's just the beginning of something pretty awesome.
It is.
But that is it for this edition of the Social Hour. We are at the end of our hour. In fact, we gave you a little bit extra. Thanks to everybody who watches and listens each week. A reminder, we are live Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our website with subscription links, if you'd like to be able to just auto download the show every week without even thinking about it, all for free, of course, is at twit.tv/TSH. And you can find Amber and I on a variety of social networks, chatting up a storm between now and then each week on Twitter and Facebook and even Google+. And Instagram and Vine and...
Instagram video,
all of that good stuff.
Everywhere.
Amber, do you have anything awesome coming up in the next week before I see you again?
Not so much, actually. I'm looking forward to not traveling for a few days. So I'll be happy to catch up on some sleep, catch up on some work, and just enjoy a fun weekend at home.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to more Instagram videos from you. I'm going to try to turn my attitude around about the service and find a way that it can be more fun for me.
Big expectations now, Sarah.
Yeah. I think part of it is everybody had to put up a video or two yesterday.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was just like, does this work? And so I saw too many of those videos and was like, oh, Instagram's ruined forever. I'm sure that's all going to die down.
Yeah.
So, all right, everybody. Thanks for watching. And until next time. Have fun online.
See you soon.